something I really want to discuss. It's just, no one has a guarantee they'll get a tomorrow. Anyone could die at any moment. People know that on an intellectual level, but unless you're old, the odds of death on any given day are low. But for me, there's a good chance every day I could wake up in the morning and have no idea who or where I am. Every day literally could be my last. Chloe and Kat are white, silent, gaping at me in shock. So, to fall in love? I have to take another deep breath because I'm getting so choked up. To fall in love would not only be pointless, but also possibly the cruelest thing I could ever do to someone. I look at Chloe. Imagine if AJ woke up tomorrow morning and had no memory of who you are. No memory of Abby or your life together, or even being in love with you. What if you were nothing to him but a stranger? How would you feel? Her eyes well with water. She whispers, I'd want to die. Yes, I say quietly, holding her gaze. Welcome to my world. There's a long, tense silence. Then, at the same time, Chloe and Kat burst into tears. Kat jumps up, throws her arms around my neck, and starts to sob all over me. Hugging me tightly, she wails, Why didn't you ever fucking tell us this before, you fucking selfish goddamn twat? I have to smile. When Kat gets emotional, her paper-thin, logical side flies out the window, and she starts to curse like a drunken sailor and emote all over the place.
Gee, I don't know,
I say, my face smashed into her boobs.
Couldn't be anything to do with the reaction I knew I'd get.
Oh, Gracie. Oh, honey. I'm so sorry.
Now I've got Chloe on my other side, hugging me and crying into my hair. I feel like someone should be filming this for a PMS commercial. Oh, stop, you two. You're ruining my silk blouse. I gently push them away. They sit, their wet faces and big, weepy eyes so depressing I have to down the contents of my glass in one gulp. Jesus, women are high maintenance. My point of telling you this isn't to make you feel sorry for me, but to try to get you to accept that the house in the suburbs and the 2.5 babies and the man of my dreams isn't in the cards for me. And that's okay. I have a full life. I have a job I love. I glance at them sourly. And I have you two dimwits. Quite frankly, I think I'm luckier than most. Silence. Then Kat bursts into tears again, which, of course, makes Chloe join in. Oh, for fuck's sake. I sigh and pour myself another drink. By the time I get back to my condo, I'm mentally, physically, and emotionally exhausted. All I want to do is take a bath and a Xanax and crawl into bed. I drop my purse and keys on the console inside the door, flip on the lights, and go into my bedroom, where I notice the red light blinking on the answering machine. It's a message from the concierge downstairs saying they have a package waiting for me. I call down and tell them to send it up. 5 minutes later, I'm staring at an enormous bouquet of white orchids in a crystal vase. What the hell? I mutter, standing at the open door in my bare feet. Would you like me to put it anywhere in particular? Asks Sheridan, the night concierge from behind the flowers. He's a big guy, but the bouquet is even bigger. I can't see his upper body. Sure, how about the dining room table? I swing the door open wider and let him in. Sheridan walks carefully forward, peering through the flowers, trying not to trip on any stray objects. Chair on your left. I warn just as he's about to stumble into it. Thanks. This sucker's huge. He manages to get it to the dining room without breaking any body parts or furniture and sets it down on the table with a grunt. Then he stands back and examines the flowers with his hands propped on his hips. Looks like you made a big impression on somebody, Miss Grace. Or someone heard I died. Startled, Sheridan looks over at me. Only kidding. My gallows humor doesn't always go over. I hand him $5 and show him to the door. Once he's gone, I open the white envelope attached to the flowers. It reads, Grace, bring your date to my housewarming on Saturday. I need to get a look at the competition. Yours, Brody. P.S. I've made a list of rebuttals to your arguments of why we shouldn't date. It's pretty detailed, but I'll give you a little preview of number 17. In response to your assertion that it would be awkward if it didn't work out between us, due to the inevitability we'd be forced to see each other because of the relationships of our mutual friends. No one has to know. P.P.S. I can't stop thinking about you. I might need to seek therapy. Know any good therapists? P.P.P.S. I know you can't stop thinking about me either. If it feels like this now. He leaves the rest unwritten, but the meaning is clear. If it feels like this now, before we've even touched, except for a brief closed-mouthed kiss that I quickly ended, what would it feel like if I actually gave in and we got together? Like trouble, I say aloud to the empty room. Cocky son of a bitch. He signed it with a scribble, his phone number beneath. I hesitate for a moment, thinking, but then decide to call, thank him for the flowers, and offer another firm, polite refusal so this doesn't go any further. I mentally don my strongest, steeliest armor and dial his number from my cell. He answers after two rings with a sleepy, Hello? Hello, Brody, I say briskly, all business. This is Grace. I'm calling to say thank.
Grace? Do I know a Grace?
He muses, his voice low, scratchy, and full of mischief.
Let me think. Describe what you look like.
Ha, ha. You know exactly what I look like. As I was saying, I'm calling to...
Are you the Grace with the hump back and the hairy wart on the end of her nose?
What? No, of course not. He pretends to think.
The short one with the extra toe on her left foot?
Oh my God, this is ridiculous. You know exactly who I am.
Oh, yes.
He sighs dreamily.
You're the one with skin like fresh cream and hair the color of autumn and eyes like thunderclouds over the sea.
After a moment, I ask, Have you been drinking? I feel his chuckle all the way down to my toes.
No, I've actually been napping and having seriously dirty and wonderful dreams of you. Come over. I'm still in bed.
I put the phone to my chest, close my eyes, and inhale a big, calming breath.
Hello?
I put the phone back up to my ear. I'm here.
Did you drop the phone?
No. Sort of. It doesn't matter. Listen, what I've been trying to say is...
I just want to get to know you better.
He interrupts with sudden intensity.
No strings, no expectations, no pressure. Don't blow me off yet, okay?
Dear God, this man is going to be the death of me. I turn my back on the flowers and walk slowly down the hallway into my bedroom. I go into the bathroom and stare at myself in the mirror.
You're not saying anything, he prompts. What are you doing right now?
I answer honestly, looking at myself in the mirror and trying to decide if I should hang up or not.
Please don't,
he softly begs. Something in the center of my chest melts. Warmth spreads throughout my body.
Fuck.
I whisper.
I have this really awful feeling that you're going to be my kryptonite. So you have a Superman complex. Interesting.
His tone has switched from pleading to teasing, lightning fast.
I wonder if it's because he could sense I was about to not only hang up on him because it was getting too intense, but erase his number forever, move to the Amazon jungle, and join an all-female cult that worships cats and carbohydrates as divinities. But because we've moved to safer ground, I ditch that plan and stay on the line. Actually, Batman was always my favorite.
Really? Why?
He sounds genuinely interested, so I tell him. Because he's not really a superhero. He doesn't have superhuman strength or amazing powers, or really any advantages other than money and technology. He's just a man with a fucked up past trying to do the right thing. The silence that follows throbs with something I can't describe. Then, in a husky voice that cracks more than once, Brody says,
On a scale of 1 to 10, how weird would it be if I told you I just fell in love with you?
I don't know why, but that makes me laugh out loud.
11-7.
He laughs, too.
Oh, good. No worries, then.
After our laughter dies down, he says,
Moving on. You haven't yet thanked me for the flowers.
I roll my eyes. What do you think I've been trying to do this entire call?
Pretend you're not as into me as I am into you. Your usual MO. But that's beside the point. Did the florist send the big drapey white orchids like I asked?
They did.
And are they as amazing as they promised me they'd be?
They are. He sounds smug.
Good. You can go ahead, then.
Go ahead and what?
Thank me. Where are your manners, Slick?
Slick? Did you just call me Slick? His voice turns practical.
I figure you've probably been called every variation of red in honor of your hair color, so I thought I'd go with the general overall impression you made the first time I saw you. I'm not sure if that's a compliment or not.
You thought I looked slick? Without hesitation or artifice, he quietly replies,
I thought you looked like the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen.
Blood rushes into my face. A dull, hot throb in my cheeks quickly spreads to my ears and neck.
Uh-oh, says Brody. She's gone radio silent again.
Normally, I'm not this easily rattled, but I must admit, Mr. Scott, you really know how to throw me for a loop. The smug tone makes a reappearance.
Aha, so you know my last name. You've been stalking me on the internet, haven't you?
I say dryly, let's not get carried away.
Speaking of getting carried away, what are you wearing to my party on Saturday?
In spite of myself, I chuckle. Number one, that was the absolute worst segue I've ever heard. And number two, I never said I was coming to your party.
You are, though, right? The flowers totally worked.
He still sounds playful, but I hear the undertone of seriousness. I sigh, rubbing a hand over my burning cheek.
No. You know what that tells me?
I look at the ceiling, hoping for a stray asteroid to demolish my building so I won't have to continue this conversation.
I can hardly wait to know that you're afraid.
I'm not afraid, Egosaurus. I'm just otherwise engaged.
So be otherwise unengaged. I told you, bring him.
Are you always like this?
Like what?
He asks innocently. Like a friggin' goat.
A goat?
He sounds insulted. You know, because they're so stubborn.
No. No, that's an absolutely terrible comparison. Come on. Seriously, a goat?
What would be better? A dog?
A dog?
He shouts.
You're terrible at this. Dogs are like the most obedient animals on the planet.
Okay, I give up. What animal would you like me to compare you to? His voice turns reflective.
Well, cats are really stubborn, but they're also mostly assholes, too, so we can't go with a cat.
I would say a mule, but there's absolutely nothing sexy about a mule.
God forbid he doesn't get a sexy animal, I mutter.
And birds are just dumb. A panther is super cool and probably totally stubborn, lone hunter and all that, but also technically a cat, and therefore I'm sure it has all that cat assholiness.
I start to giggle and can't stop. This is alarming, not only because I'm not a person who giggles, but also because I'm enjoying this conversation way too much for my own good. When Brody starts to talk again, I can hear in his voice that he's trying to stifle his own laughter.
Okay, so we've gone through canines, felines, aves.
Aves?
That means birds. Keep up, slick. Bovidae and equidae.
Did you want to be a zoologist when you were growing up or something?
And we've gotten nowhere fast, so I'm thinking we should maybe move on to fictional animals.
There's an invitation in his pause. Apes, I declare.
Can you be more specific?
King Kong. He was super stubborn.
Also big. I approve of this comparison. He probably had a huge
brain, I say sweetly.
Appetite, I was going to say. Imagine the amount of vegetation a 100-foot-tall ape would consume in a day.
Imagine the size of his apey turds. Brody makes a disgusted sound.
No, I'd rather not, thank you. God, now that you mention it, that jungle probably stunk like a porta potty at Woodstock.
That does it. My giggles turn into full-on, uncontrollable hoots of laughter. I even snort a time or two. I'm so out of control.
And she's snorting. Do you snore too, you delicate flower?
Brody teases.
Still laughing, I say.
Probably, although I couldn't say for sure.
What, none of your boy toys ever told you?
None of them have ever spent the night. It's out of my mouth before I can censor myself. Instantly, my laughter dies. Brody senses my sudden distress. He says gently,
"Easy, slick. I won't ask."
Relieved, I release a slow breath. He adds,
"Unless you feel the need to, you know, unburden yourself or something, I hear confessions can be quite cathartic."
"No, thanks." And I think that's bullshit, by the way.
What is?
That confessions are cathartic. I think it's the coward's way out. His silence burns. He says softly,
"How do you mean?"
"I mean, if you did something bad and the guilt is eating you up, find a way to handle it yourself in a constructive way. Don't go blathering your guilt all over the place for everyone else to deal with. I see it all the time in my practice. A couple comes in because, out of the blue, the husband couldn't take the guilt of some one-night stand he had and confesses it to his wife to make himself feel better. Only now, she's devastated. They would have both been better off if he'd just kept his mouth shut and dedicated himself to being the best husband he could be in the future." After a while, he says cryptically,
"Well, that answers that."
I frown. "Please don't tell me you have something terrible you need to confess." His pause is so brief, I think I imagined it.
"Well, I was going to confess that I'm sitting here with my dick in my hand because your voice is so fucking sexy it gets me hard. But geez, after that little speech, I'll just keep my mouth shut and deal with it myself."
He chuckles.
"Constructively."
He chuckles again.
"If you hear any odd moans or groans, just ignore them."
The heat comes back into my cheeks. "Are you trying to have phone sex with me, Mr. Scott?" He groans.
"God, it's hot when you call me that in that stern librarian tone. It totally gets my sexy teacher fantasy going."
Perhaps I'll have to spank you with a ruler. He sucks in a low breath.
"Oh, you're an evil, evil woman.
And you, Mr. Scott, are a bad, bad boy."
"Fuck, I'm gonna ruin these new sheets, he mutters.
I'll leave you to it, then, I say evenly, trying to keep the tremor running through my body out of my voice.
Wait.
I hesitate.
What? Say you'll come to the party.
I don't respond. He says, please. I still don't respond. He says,
pretty please.
I can't trust myself around you. I blurt and instantly want to punch myself in the face. His tone gets all growly and gruff.
Because...
I sit on the edge of the bathtub, close my eyes, and sigh.
Because I'm too attracted to you.
Even his silence sounds confused.
You realize that makes zero sense, right?
It does to me. I don't expect you to understand.
I would if you explained it.
No.
Gee, hesitate a little, why don't you?
Stop being cute, it's aggravating.
Sorry, Slick. Cute is my middle name.
Ugh.
Is this a bad time to ask you what you're wearing?
Oh, my God. I'm going to strangle you when I see you next. His voice brightens.
So you are coming to the party.
Goodbye, Brody. He says quickly,
how about this? Think about this whole situation over the next few days.
Which whole situation specifically?
Us. Me wanting you. You wanting me. You being a big wuss and not giving me a chance because I'm so scorching hot your panties melt off every time you look at me.
Dear God, I grumble. I've created a monster.
Ahem, as I was saying. Think about what you want to do here. Then come to the party and we can talk about it.
When I make a dangerous noise in the back of my throat, he quickly adds,
okay, we don't have to talk about it. You can wear something that will tell me what your decision is.
I think you were right when you said you needed therapy. Seriously, Brody, you're crazy. He completely ignores that.
A green dress for go. A red dress for no go. What do you say?
I say you're nuts.
Good,
he says, sounding as if I've just agreed to his terms.
See you Saturday then, Slick.
His voice drops.
And please don't break my heart. Wear a green fucking dress.
Then the bastard hangs up on me. I open my eyes, stand, and stare at myself in the mirror. We're not going to that party, I say firmly to my reflection. She doesn't look convinced. 7. The next few days pass quickly. I'm busy at work and exhausted by the time I get home because I'm not sleeping well. I've been eating dinner and going to bed early, and getting up early, screaming and covered in sweat. It's a good thing my condo building has excellent soundproofing because I'd be giving poor old Mr. Leibovitz upstairs a nightly heart attack if he could hear me. On Friday I have a date with Marcus. By date, I mean rough animalistic sex at my place. I come more times than I can count, primarily because the entire time I'm fantasizing about, guess who? Yes, that's right. The panty-melting, guitar-slinging, King Kong-channeling, velvet-voiced lusciousness that is Brody Scott. I'm so screwed. Lying next to me on his back, sweating and panting, the bed covers demolished beneath us, Marcus starts to laugh.
Holy hell, Grace. You almost broke my dick off. That was epic.
I smile drowsily at the ceiling. I know. I'm a goddess.
You taking new vitamins or something?
Yep. Vitamin B. When I chuckle at my own inside joke, Marcus rolls to his side and gazes down at me, his eyes warm. He pulls the sheets down to my stomach and begins to languidly trace a finger over my breasts. He says casually,
so...
I look at him sharply, already knowing where this is going. The answer is no. His finger falls still beneath my left nipple.
You don't even know what I was going to say.
You were going to ask whether or not I'd thought about extending our one-month stand, and the answer is no. He looks confused.
No, you haven't thought about it, or no, you don't want to extend it?
Both. He blinks.
Ouch.
I sit up, sighing, and push my hair off my face. I prop my elbows on my knees and look at him over my shoulder. You'll find someone else within a week.
Yeah, probably. That's not the point.
That is the point. We're both tramps. It's what we do.
And we're good at what we do. Together.
I groan. Marcus sits up and slides his big, warm hand up my back, under my hair.
All I'm saying is that a 30-day limit seems arbitrary.
It isn't. Believe me, it isn't. He studies my face for a while in silence. Then he quietly asks,
Does this have to do with that big binder you keep on your kitchen counter?
Immediately, I'm in uber-defensive mode, hackles up and hissing. That's none of your business. It's as if he takes that as a challenge because he bulldozes straight ahead.
The binder that contains pictures of your friends and work associates with their names on labels and descriptions of how long you've known them and detailed lists of your bank accounts, insurance policies, credit cards, and mortgages, and a letter to yourself explaining that if you wake up and don't know where you are.
I jump out of bed and stand livid at the side, my hands clenched to fists, my pulse thundering in my ears, glaring daggers at him.
Get out,
I say deadly soft.
Right now. Grace, you had no right, no fucking right to look at that.
His eyes are big, dark, and full of something I'm horrified to recognize as pity. He says,
I get it. Why you do what you do, keeping people out, pushing them away. It's a defense mechanism. It's self-preservation.
So help me God, if you say one more word, I'll pick up that letter opener on my dresser and stab you to death with it.
Grace,
he says softly, his eyes pleading with me.
I know what it's like to always be alone.
You don't know anything, Marcus, I say bitterly. A hot prick of tears stings my eyes.
Now get dressed and get out of my house.
He purses his lips. Looks at me for a while and then declares,
No.
He leans back against the headboard, his arms behind his head. I almost scream, I'm so frustrated and furious. I whirl around, stick my hands into my hair, close my eyes, and count to 10. Then I count to 10 again. Finally, when I'm more calm, I cross my arms over my chest and say, All right. Go ahead and say your piece, but at the end I'm still going to throw you out. There's a long pause as if he's carefully choosing his words.
I saw that binder the first time I came over here, a month ago.
Mother. Fucker.
I didn't say anything because I knew it wasn't my business. I hoped you'd eventually talk about it, thought maybe... After we'd been together a few times and had such a connection, I guess I hoped you might feel safe with me. We're like exactly the same person, Grace, except I have a dick.
My voice is hollow when I answer. We met at a sex club, Marcus. There is zero chance of this ever becoming anything other than what it is. Meaningless sex.
It isn't meaningless,
he protests. I turn to look at him, letting him see the truth in my eyes. It is to me. His nostrils flare.
You're only saying that because you're angry with me.
Suddenly, I feel so tired, I just want to lie down on the floor, go to sleep, and never wake up. I sit on the edge of the mattress and take Marcus's hand. No,
I'm sorry, but it's the truth. It's not you. And I know that sounds like a total cliche, but it isn't you. I can't have that kind of connection with anyone. He pulls me against him, tucks my head into his shoulder, and winds his arm around my body. Against my hair, he says,
"You could have that kind of connection with someone, and he's right here."
"Oh, God," I groan. "You have a bigger vagina than I do, buddy." My head jiggles up and down as his chest moves with his laughter.
"Are you calling me a girl?"
"No, I'm calling you a cab." His arm tightens around me. He whispers,
"Are you sure? For sure, for sure?"
When I answer yes without hesitation, Marcus sighs.
"You're a shit for my ego, lady."
"You'll survive." We lie together for long moments, just breathing. The room is warm and quiet. Beyond the bedroom windows, I hear a dog barking somewhere outside. I don't think I've ever heard anything as lonely in my entire life. Finally, Marcus stirs. I look up into his face. He says,
"Technically, we still have one night left."
"Oh." He chuckles.
"Try not to sound so enthused."
"It's just... it sort of feels like we already broke up. Adding one more night so we can just break up again seems redundant." Still chuckling, he kisses me on the forehead.
"You're a real piece of work, you know that?"
"Yes, more than anything else, that I do know." He suggests,
"Maybe we could go to the movies? Or something that feels not like a breakup, but like an ex-fuck buddy who got friend-zoned outing. No sex, just hanging out for our last night together. What do you think?"
A light bulb blinks on over my head. "Like a housewarming party?"
"Sure, that works. Maybe you could introduce me to some of your single girlfriends."
He teases, but I'm too distracted to reply. Brody did say I should bring Marcus to his party. He also said I should wear something that would let him know, definitively, one way or the other, what I'd decided to do about us. Us. Like, that's a thing. I start to get excited. This could be a perfect solution all the way around. I'll bring Marcus on our last date to the party of a rock star, where there will undoubtedly be several hundred hot single women milling around like piranha, ready to bite, and I'll wear a red dress, which will signal to Brody in no uncertain terms that there is not and never will be anything between us, and I won't have to talk about it with him. Well, isn't that all wrapped with a pretty bow? Feeling much better, I sit up and look at Marcus. Okay. Housewarming party it is. Pick me up at 3:30 and wear something hot. I want to make sure we pick out a good replacement girl for you. As I trot off into the bathroom to take a shower, I hear Marcus's amused laugh behind me. He's going to be just fine.
8. Brody. Check, 1, 2. Check, check, checkaroo. "You're good," calls SpongeBob from behind the amp. He pops his square blonde head around the big black amp box, grinning, showing off the space where his tooth went missing when he took a drunken header into a curb on our Eurotrash tour in Germany last year. He was so fucked up he didn't feel a thing. I haven't asked him why he hasn't gotten it fixed, because he'd probably answer with some supremely SpongeBob-y thing like, "Dude, I've got like 2 dozen others." Some of my best friends are roadies, but they're generally not the sharpest tools in the shed. "Cool, man. Thanks." I jump down off the stage and survey the setup. My backyard is fucking huge. You could land a jumbo jet out here, and has an amazing view of the Pacific. It also has a private beach, two swimming pools, a separate guest house, and an enormous stand of king palm trees that have been growing on the property since it was first developed back in the 40s. They're the perfect backdrop for a beach rock and roll show. Hey, asshole! A grinning Nico is headed toward me from the open patio doors. Beside him, Cat smacks his arm and appears to be scolding him as they get closer. Chicks don't get how much we guys enjoy giving each other shit. What's up, dickface? I say, giving him a hug. Not much, ballsack. Better to be a ballsack than a taint, like you. Ballsacks are very useful. No real use for a taint. Nico grins. Unless you're a taint licker, like you. Cat throws her hands in the air. For God's sake, you two, can you find some friendly insults that don't involve the 4 inches between your balls and your butthole? Nico and I look at each other. At the same time, we say, no. Ugh, typical. Cat gives me a hug. When she pulls back, she looks at my flip-flops, my board shorts, and my t-shirt and says, you look like you just got back from swimming. Surfing. I run a hand through my wet hair. Do it every chance I can. The private beach is mainly the reason I bought this place. Right, says Nico, looking around. Couldn't have anything to do with the view. Or the 50,000-square-foot house, adds Kat, lifting her hand to shade her eyes from the bright afternoon sun. It's only 8,500 square feet. Oh, excuse me, she rolls her eyes. 8,500 square feet on about 4 million acres. 2 acres. You're incredibly bad at judging the size of things, you know that? I smile at Nico. She probably thinks your tiny Johnson is like 10 inches long, am I right? Kat spreads her hands about 2 feet wide. She says with a straight face, I don't know, is this 10 inches? Nico smirks at me. Touché, moving on. So did Grace come with you guys? Kat uncomfortably shifts her weight from 1 foot to the other. No. Have you talked to her? I look between her and Nico, who only shrugs. Not for a few days. Why? Well, she's coming, but she's bringing Marcus. She said you told her to. I'm thrilled she's coming, because I've spent days obsessing over whether or not she would, what she would wear, and my approach when she showed up in a red dress, but then I stop short, pulled up by the second part of that statement. She's bringing Marcus. So the competition's name is Marcus. Cool name. Sounds concerning. Oh yeah, I told her to bring him, I say casually, dragging my hand through my hair again. I squint off into the distance. She likes this guy, huh? Nico makes a noise like a snort, only way more caustic. Yeah, the way a cat likes a mouse. Cat sends him a death glare, the likes of which I've never seen, and which, if I were on the receiving end, would shrivel my balls to the size of raisins. She hisses, One more word, superstar, and you're sleeping on the couch tonight. Unperturbed by this outburst, Nico gazes down at her. A slow, cocky smile spreads across his face. Yeah? You think you could sleep without me, baby? Her cheeks turn pink. She looks primly down at her shoes. He laughs out loud, drags her against his chest, and gives her an embarrassingly intimate kiss. Get a room for fuck's sake, I mutter, looking away. I'm not mad, just jealous as fuck. I know something like what Nico and Kat have isn't in the cards for a guy like me. I might not believe in God anymore, but I do believe in karma because she's been kicking me in the teeth in the relationship department for years. A good woman falling in love with me is about as likely as seeing a flock of pigs fly overhead. I'm not complaining, though. It's not as if I deserve to be happy. I'm just really good at pretending I am. I ask, Do you guys know if AJ and Chloe are going to make it? I texted him this morning, but he didn't get back to me. Kat reluctantly extricates herself from Nico's greedy embrace. Smiling now, she says, Chloe wanted to come, but AJ put the kibosh on it, said it was too soon for the baby to be at a party. Too soon, I repeat in disbelief. She's the offspring of a rock star. She's got parties in her blood. She had a party in her room 10 minutes after she was born. Jesus, he's turning into an old woman. Next thing you know, he'll be knitting baby booties and hitting up the local bingo parlor. Nico says, he's a father now. Your priorities shift. He looks at Kat. Personally, I can't wait for it to happen to me. Then he tucks Kat underneath his arm and gives her a smile that leaves her starry-eyed. Uncomfortable, I look away again. Dude, Nico chuckles. Just wait, brother. One of these days you're going to meet someone that blows your whole fucking world apart, and then you'll get what I'm talking about. Then, as if it were scripted in a fucking romance movie, a flash of red appears in my peripheral vision. There stands Grace at the open glass patio doors of my new house, her hands lifted to shade her eyes from the glare of the sun as she scans the backyard. My eyes drink her in. Those long legs and those dangerous curves and that amazing hair waving past her shoulders, shiny and thick, the color of persimmons, and that sexy little dress she's wearing. Oh my God, the fucking dress. I start to laugh because really there's nothing else to do. Why are you laughing? Asks Kat. Inside joke, I say, my gaze still on Grace. Your friend's a goddamn firecracker, you know that? Actually, Kat answers quietly, I think she might be the bravest person I've ever met. I'm just about to ask her what she means when a black dude the size of a skyscraper appears by Grace's side and slings a giant arm around her shoulders. His head is shaved. His shoulders are like boulders. His clothes, a white dress shirt and tan slacks, were obviously custom-made to fit his enormous frame. He's wearing dark glasses and a confident, easy smile, like he's used to having all eyes on him, and loves it. Enter the competition. Whoa, says Nico. Is that Grace's flavor of the month? Marcus, Kat affirms. He's a talent agent at CAA, reps a bunch of huge names, Cruz, Damon, Statham, specializes in action heroes. He's very large, Nico coughs into his hand. Large doesn't even cover it. The dude is massive. He gives AJ a run for his money in the size department. I glance down at myself. I'm no shrimp, and I've got pretty good muscle definition from all the surfing I do, but if I had to arm wrestle this Marcus character, there's a strong chance I'd end up in the emergency room with a team of surgeons trying to reattach the bloody stump of my biceps to my shoulder. And if his arms are that big, fuck. The angry toddler inside my head starts howling and breaking shit in frustration. Nico bursts out laughing. I'd pay $1 million for a picture of your face right now, my friend. Suck it, Nix, I growl, my hungry gaze still on Grace. Kat suggests, maybe he has small feet, you know, because if he has small feet. Nico and I look at her with our brows raised. She shrugs. Just trying to be helpful. Grace catches my eye again. She waves, says something to Marcus, and the two of them start to walk down the winding stone pathway towards us on the lower lawn. As they get closer, Nico dryly observes, yeah, that theory just went out the window. We all look at Marcus's feet, clad in a pair of seriously expensive-looking brown leather dress shoes. And holy, in a low, impressed voice, Kat says, oh my. Do you think he could use those as skis? I hate my fucking life. Hi, kids, says Grace brightly, stopping beside us. She gives Kat and Nico hugs and then turns to look at me. With a totally serene, unruffled expression, she says sweetly, Kong. Slick, I reply, holding her gaze. Nice dress. It's sleeveless, short enough to show off her long, bare legs, with a belted waist and little gold buttons all the way down the front. But that's not what makes it so interesting. What makes it so interesting is the color. It's red. And green. It's fucking polka dot. Big green and red polka dots on a background of white. If she's trying to drive me completely insane, it's working. Grace looks down at herself. Oh, this old thing? When she looks up at me, her smile is brilliant. Well, I couldn't decide what to wear, so... So she dressed up in Christmas colors, says the giant Marcus, in this smooth baritone that would make the late great Barry White gnash his teeth and... The guy is huge, good-looking, dresses well, has enormous feet, a job that chicks probably think is super glamorous, and a voice I bet Nico would trade his Ferrari collection for, and I'm standing here in flip-flops and wet hair like I'm the fucking pool boy. Hi, I'm Brody. I extend my hand to Marcus, because fuck if I'm going to be intimidated by him. She wore polka dots. Marcus, nice to meet you. Marcus shakes my hand. It's like trying to shake hands with a catcher's mitt. We give each other a manly, serious nod. I try really hard not to puff out my chest the way my inner toddler is demanding I do. And I'm Nico. Nice to meet you, man. Nico and Marcus shake hands too, and then Grace introduces Kat. And this is one of my best friends, Kat. Don't let her size fool you. She's savage in reverse proportion to her height. I watch Kat's hand disappear into the monster that is Marcus's hand. He says to her, It's a pleasure, Kat. I would say I've heard all about you, but... He throws an easy smile at Grace. That'd be a lie. Grace smiles back at him and shrugs. My heart leaps. What does that mean? Why wouldn't Grace have told him anything about her best friend? Does Grace not tell him anything about anything? Does Grace not really like him that much? Don't get too excited, bonehead. Just look at the size of his shoes and calm the fuck down. Amazing place you've got here, man. Marcus addresses me, his voice sincere. Used to be Spielberg's, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, that's right. Thanks. I'm really digging the open-plan living room with Pagan Groove hardwood floors. I have no idea what Pagan Groove hardwood floors are. I only know that the floors are brown and made of dead trees. Oh. Yeah, the Pagan Groove, right. Grace cocks a brow at me. She obviously knows I have no idea what Marcus is talking about, but she doesn't give me away. She turns the conversation to another topic before he can really do a number on what's left of my shredded manhood and ask me what the roof is made of, to which I'd have to respond, Roof stuff? Are we early? I thought you said 4 o'clock, but it looks like we're the first ones here. The valet guys were barely even awake out front. Nope, you're right on time. Grace looks confused. Then where is everyone? Nico and I chuckle. I say, the sun's still up. So, your friends only come out after dark? You close with a bunch of vampires or something? I shrug. Musicians aren't exactly known for their love of daylight and exemplary timeliness. I figure most people will start to show around 6, which is when I wanted them here, which is why I told everyone 4. Grace looks appalled. She turns to Marcus. Are actors like that, too? He says, Only the addicts. Most actors are so anal retentive they show up 2 hours early. Grace pronounces, Then I like actors better than musicians, and I think my head will explode. Nico glances at my face, tries not to smirk, fails miserably, and coughs into his hand again to hide his laugh. Marcus gestures at the stage to our right. You guys doing a private show tonight? We were, but AJ bailed so we don't have a drummer, so I think we'll probably just end up... I can play drums, says Marcus, full of confidence. Been playing since I was a little kid. Had a music scholarship for college, too, but I took the football scholarship instead. When no one says anything because we're all too mind-fucked over this new piece of news, he adds, I mean, it's cool if you don't want me to. I'm actually really good, but no worries. I get it, band cohesiveness and everything. And no one could ever fill AJ's shoes anyway. Kat looks at Marcus's feet, looks at me, then pulls her lips between her teeth because she's trying not to laugh. Would you all excuse me for a moment, I say, smiling. I just have to go inside and hang myself. 9. Grace finds me in the kitchen just as I'm about to down my 3rd shot of tequila. Hey, Kong, she says casually, gliding in with that ballerina's walk of hers. That was a pretty fast exit you made back there. Yeah, well, it was either run away or fling myself face down in the sand and throw a tantrum, so I decided to go with running away. Plus, there's tequila in here. Oh, needed something to steady your nerves? Ha. No, your boyfriend ate my nerves for lunch. This is just to get me through the next few hours until I can pass out at a respectable time. Hopefully, blackout, so I won't have to relive the joyous moment when I was completely emasculated in front of this girl that I've kinda sorta had a huge crush on since the dawn of time. I raise the shot glass in a toast to her, and then swallow its contents. Smiling, she moves closer to where I'm standing at the sink. He's not my boyfriend. My eyes bulge. If you say he's just a stud that services me sexually with his enormous talent, you'll have to deal with a grown man sobbing at your feet. She leans her hip against the counter, folds her arms over her chest, and levels me with her eyes. I wasn't kidding when I told her they were the color of thunderclouds over the sea. I've never seen eyes like hers, flinty one moment, soft and playful the next, every possible shade of gray depending on the light, from pearl to iron to dove to steel. They're fascinating. She's fascinating. Fuck, I'm toast. Not a pretty picture, she muses, straight-faced. She pauses for a moment and then says, If it makes you feel any better, this is our last date. We broke up yesterday. I keep my expression neutral, but inside my head there's a stadium of fans who just leapt to their feet and started screaming because a batter hit a home run out of the park. Would you like to elaborate? She moistens her lips. My dick takes that as some kind of Morse code for fellatio because he springs to life behind my zipper the way Cookie Monster springs to life when he catches the scent of chocolate chips. She says, It's complicated. Without breaking eye contact, I ask, As complicated as that dress you're wearing? She pulls her full lower lip between her teeth, and I swear to God my dick almost explodes with the amount of blood that rushes into it. This is ridiculous. Get a grip. Do you have any idea, she says softly, how difficult it is to find a red and green polka dot dress on short notice? I'm all boner. I have zero brain cells left. There is no blood circulating anywhere else in my body. Someone stick a fork in me because I am fucking done. Our eyes still glued together, I say, You do realize there's a big green polka dot right over your crotch, right? Oh, she answers, all Bambi-eyed innocence. There is? We stare at each other. The moment stretches out. Finally, when I can't take it anymore, I whisper gruffly, Grace. It's like hearing me say her name does something to her, because her eyes flutter closed and she inhales a sharp breath. Wait, she says quickly. Don't say anything else yet. I stand there and watch her breathe with her eyes closed, fighting every instinct inside me that's screaming, touch her, kiss her, take her in your arms. I have to do something. I reach out and, very softly, touch her cheek. And she shudders. She fucking shudders. I've never felt anything like the bolt of need and longing that crashes through me, hot as fire, dark as midnight. My hands shake with it. My heart pounds with it. It takes every ounce of self-control I have not to crush my mouth against hers, yank up her dress, pull down her panties, and fuck her right here, bent over the kitchen counter, fast and hard. Because I know she wants it just as badly as I do. Open your eyes, I demand. When I see what's reflected in her eyes when her lashes slowly lift, the desire and ambivalence, the raw emotion, I groan. I have to kiss you, I whisper, stepping closer and taking her face in my hands. Brody, please, wait. She flattens her hands over my chest. I groan again, my lips inches from hers. I can't. I look into her eyes. You can. I know you want to. Don't fucking lie to me, I growl, pressing up against her. When our bodies meet, she inhales the sexiest little gasp that manages to make me feel like a Viking warrior who just conquered a new continent. Thrilled by the sound of it, I put my lips next to her ear and say, My cock is so hard it hurts, and your nipples are so hard I can see them right through your clothes, and I bet if I put my hand inside your panties right now, it would come away soaking wet. Am I right? Her only answer is a shaky exhalation. Yes, I growl. I'm right. And you said you broke up with Marcus, so give me one good reason why I shouldn't kiss you, Grace. Just one. Her whole body is trembling. Her breath comes in short, soft pants. Fuck it, this is happening. Right now. The moment my lips touch hers, Grace blurts, because I don't want to hurt you. I freeze and open my eyes. She's staring back at me with this wild look, like she might bolt at any second. I stay perfectly still. Do you have venomous saliva? It's meant as a joke, something to lighten the moment, but it doesn't work. She looks away as if she's ashamed. Talk to me. When she doesn't respond, I gently turn her face back to mine. We look into each other's eyes. I have the strangest sense of falling, like I've just stepped off a tall building and am headed at top speed for the ground. She takes a breath, gathering her strength. I have memory problems. Most people don't know about it, but I do, because Chloe told me. It was the day Abby was born, before Chloe went into labor. We were sitting around the kitchen table at Nico's house. I'll never forget that moment, or Chloe's words. When she was 18, Grace was involved in a bad car accident. Her parents were killed. She lost her memory. She can't recall anything from before the crash. She had to relearn who she was when she woke up. She didn't recognize anyone. She didn't remember anything about her life. So now she has this whole live-for-the-moment philosophy, especially with relationships. If she thinks someone she's dating is getting serious, that's it. It's over. It doesn't help that they never found the bastard that ran into them. It was a hit and run. It was the last part that made my blood run cold and bile rise up in my throat, hot and choking. Even after Chloe's water broke and everyone rushed to the hospital, I sat frozen at the kitchen table, fighting the urge to vomit, blinded by horrible memories and wondering what the odds were that the woman I felt so drawn to had suffered that particular tragedy. That old bitch karma again, stabbing me in the heart and laughing in my face. A strong feeling of protectiveness comes over me. All I want to do is put my arms around Grace and tell her everything is going to be okay, but she's not done talking yet. She looks into my eyes. In a small voice, she says, I could not remember you one day. We could start something and then I could lose any recollection of it. You'd be a stranger. Do you understand? Like fingers interlacing, several things slowly come together and fit into place. You could fall in love with me and not remember it? I whisper. She swallows and nods. Dumbfounded, I stare at her. Holy fuck. Looking miserable, she nods again. She tries to pull away, but I don't let her. I put my arms around her and squeeze. She resists for what feels like forever, stiff and uncomfortable in my arms. But then slowly she gives in. She melts against me with a sigh, tucks her face into the space between my neck and shoulder, and winds her arms around my waist. We stand like that for a while, not talking, feeling the chaotic beating of each other's hearts. Her hair smells like sunshine. She's soft and warm against me, lush and feminine. My dick is still wrestling for control with my brain, which is in a state of shock and is just sitting there lifelessly inside my skull like a big lump of cheese. And suddenly I realized what a gift I'm being offered. I can never right the wrongs of the past, no matter how desperately I might want to. But maybe those wrongs aren't the end of the story. Maybe they're only a new beginning. If I'm going to do good by her, this is a fucking fantastic place to start. My voice gruff, I say, I'm in. She pulls away and looks at me, a little furrow between her brows. What? I said I'm in. Fuck it. If I can make you fall in love with me once, I can make you fall in love with me again and again, every day if I have to. Grace blanches. The egosaurus rides again. I'm not in love with you. But you will be, I vow, looking at her dead on. Because I'm not going to leave you any other choice. I plunge my hands into her hair, grip her head, pull her toward me, and fit my mouth against hers. It's like the 4th of July and New Year's Eve and Christmas morning all rolled into one. Heat, color, noise, fireworks behind my eyes. She moans into my mouth, digs her nails into my back, arches against me. I moan too, fucking her luscious mouth with my tongue, one hand behind her neck and the other.